All right, so I think Faisal is having some technical issues, but he should join soon. Otherwise, welcome to Architect Network number 31. This is a pretty open topic. It's an open Q&A with everyone here at ATN on how to become a super user, what programs to learn, but really it's quite an open forum of like any questions you might have in terms of like whether you're a fresh graduate and what programs to learn. It doesn't all have to be software and programs. It can be asking about portfolio and job advice or career advice where you are right now. So super open forum. This is kind of a little bit of a follow-up to a video that we did a few weeks ago on our YouTube channel on like the architect skill set. I did a complete kind of breakdown of all the programs and softwares that I would recommend to learn depending on what you're interested in. And so yeah, we just kind of put this out there. We had some questions from the Instagram post, which we'll go through, but we obviously want to prioritize people that are here in the audience. This is recorded, so if you want to come up and ask a question, but you don't want it to be published, let us know and we can remove you. The reason we do want to re record it is because obviously a lot of people probably have a similar question to you. So the goal is to kind of get that out there so people that weren't able to make it or maybe didn't have the confidence to come and ask a question can tune in. So do let us know if you don't want it to be recorded. We'll edit you out because we don't want to stop anyone from coming up and asking a question. So I'll just see Faisal. I don't know if you can hear us. I think he's having some technical issues. Oh, is he
Yeah,
there?
hi, guys.
Yeah.
I'm back. I'm back. How's it going? Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Awesome,
How's it
awesome.
going? You're now in Nigeria, right?
Yeah, I'm finally back in Abuja, Nigeria.
That's awesome. So this is ATN's first African-based podcast, right? So we've done European when I moved over here, and obviously we kind of started in the US and the UAE.
Yeah, we're in Africa now.
We're in
We're
Africa now,
global.
man. We're moving. What's that?
Westward.
Four
Yeah,
continents we've done?
that's four. That's four.
Four.
We're
Can't
global.
wait for the Antarctic episode. That will be pretty sweet.
Yeah, we need
Coming
Asian
soon.
representation too.
Yeah, actually. I've got a few people in Hong Kong. We could do one there.
Yeah, we now have a good Indian audience too.
Yeah, it just gets tricky with the time zones, eh? We'll be
Yeah.
but yeah, so this is a pretty open forum. Obviously, you got myself. I am currently the design technology manager at Big. You have Guillaume on stage, who was has wor worked both as a specialist and a product designer at Big. And now, what is your title now, Guillaume? At your
It was a big debate. I mean, it was not a big debate. It was kind of like I was hired, and they were like, "So, what do you want your title to be?" It's a smaller design build company, so there is no like strong structure or anything. So, I just decided to stay designer. So it
Yeah.
keeps things very open to, I mean, I'm designing and I'm also helping kind of revamp the way they work with softwares and try to streamline a little bit the process, which is quite different when you actually have to go all the way to construction management. So,
Yeah, you're more in a you're in a design build side of things now, eh?
right, but mostly exposed to the design side, not that much the build side yet,
Yeah.
but hopefully
And it's
it'll
like
come.
180
Yeah, it's called
degrees
180
design.
Degrees. Yeah, it's based in Phoenix, Arizona.
Yeah. So Guillaume's been a bit of a product leader, designer, but also a specialist at different firms. And Faisal is also he's been studying himself at IAC. So he's just kind of, are you still going through that, Faisal, or are you just, have you graduated yet?
No, I've actually so I've postponed the graduation until this year because obviously I wasn't able to be in Spain.
Yeah.
But I'm back in Nigeria now, and I'm actually working for my dad's company in both design and build, and we're just starting to use BIM on our recent projects. and it's actually quite interesting. So I'm gonna have him listen into this conversation actually.
Yeah.
And you know.
But I think you bring a good perspective of a fairly recent graduate or just going through university, as well as, you know, you've got some good experience as well. So we've got a good spread between us. So yeah, anyone out there, go ahead, put your hand up, come on stage, ask us anything. Doesn't have to be architecture related, I guess. But obviously that is sort of the theme. Otherwise, I'll go through some of the questions that we had through that Instagram page. But yeah, come on, raise your hands. Don't be shy. Ask us anything. If not, I'm not getting any questions yet. we'll roll into some of the Instagram questions. But all right, so I have one question we'll start off, which is a pretty easy one. Someone asked, what percentage of products are using computation? And I assume they're talking, you know, specifically a big, how much of our products use computation, how much of our projects use computation? And that's kind of an easy one. It's, I would say, nearly all of them. I would say it's pretty much 95%. I think the question really is what exactly constitutes, you know, using computation, or like how much computation is used. Because I mean, nearly every project you'll pull out a script for scattering blocks around a surface, or maybe you just pull it out to do a tiny little piece of the facade and make some kind of parametric-y pattern or something like that. Whereas you've then got like projects which are kind of completely, like, you know, let's say the project is a building, a skyscraper or something like that. The building is completely scripted from form to facade, and it's, you know, a project like the Vancouver House, you can see, is obviously a key, computation is a key part of the design process. So yeah, I would say a you know, a firm like Big, I think nearly every project is using computation. It's more of a question of to what level. Guillaume, I don't know what you would chime in there.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree. I mean, to me, a definition of computation is basically just using your computer, ideally in a smart way, but you use the power of computing to achieve something that's real at the end of the day. So, I mean, today, no project is purely hand-based, I think, or at least in companies we work at. So I'd say, yeah, everything. But then, as Oliver say, it goes from, you know, just creating a 3D model already to me is computation, because I realized that, you know, some smaller companies are barely getting in 3D.
Yeah, I mean,
or some older, yeah, some kind of more old school people, like people that learn architecture just tracing on paper, they're still there.
Yeah.
They're still working. So, you know, yeah, it helps already just to do that.
When I say I think most products are using computation, I think I'm thinking, like, you know, they're using Grasshopper, for example.
Yeah.
But yeah, you could absolutely, like, you know, Revit is got a lot of computation in it. So, but yeah, I would say most people. But even saying, it's not like, you know, many firms around the world that are, you know, like big design firms. It's not like the firms are full of Grasshopper, you know, people. I still think, you know, the people that use Grasshopper from a basic to intermediate levels are still, you know, they're not the majority, I would say. A lot of people have the basics, but it's not like, there's a lot of room still to grow, for sure.
Yeah. I think that a lot of projects should use computation more than they are. And it's just a matter of time. It's like, you know, there is a transition between hand drawing and CAD, and now CAD is the fundamental. And from there, we're going to move towards, okay, 3D is the new kind of standard. And then from there, you can plug in all kind of analysis tools, and when you have to actually generate 3D, you know, more and more you need to actually model the entire building or define a lot more what the building is going to be before you build it. before it was just more like, okay, it's going to be roughly like this, and then we'll figure it out once we start building it. But this this transition towards, you know, solving a lot more things in advance to be able to produce them and control the construction a lot better, that's just going to keep growing. So
yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
So we got a few people on stage. Exciting. Thank you for coming up. I think Naveen was our first raised hand. How's it going? Are you fire away one of your questions? Are you okay to be recorded? And or maybe you can you can decide after you've answered.
it's okay to be recorded.
Cool. So what's your question?
I'm Naveen. I'm from India.
Awesome.
So I had this dream to work for big architects in my, as I do my master's, like I finished my bachelor's very recently. So I wanted to ask this question. It maybe slightly out of topic. So what are the skills that you need, that I need to nurture as I move forward, you know, to get there to work at big? And because I love, you know, the sustainable projects, the hedonistic sustainable projects, and Big's master plan for the world. So I want to, you know, be part of it in the future.
That's awesome. Yeah, I'm also super excited about the Master Planet project. I get to now I'm in London. It's a project that's developed in the London office, so I actually get to see it now. I'm definitely excited for that to come out. But yeah, I think it's awesome that you want to join a company like Big, and kind of especially if you're interested in sustainable architecture. Of course, that's something we're really interested. We're not the only firm as well. There's loads of firms out there that are also doing it. But you know, I think you know, it's super important to one, have a great design skill. You know, we talk about software and you know, all this kind of stuff, but we often talk about this assuming, you know, everyone has a great design skill set. So of course, in that way, I think continuing to like develop your own design skill set, whether that's, you know, not, and that just doesn't end at university. It can be, you know, doing competitions and projects on the side. Like, I always think of your design technology, your design skill set as like, you know, going to the gym. You got to like train and keep doing projects, and you'll get better and better and develop your own kind of design language and things like that. So I think as one is, you know, you have to have a great design skill set, and that is portrayed in your portfolio. And, you know, your portfolio is a key part of communicating your designability, your sensibility, you know, how do you graphically lay it out as well as just the project. So your portfolio is super important. And then I think the things I always kind of advise for graduating architects is like, you know, if you are the one thing you can come out of university with that is really useful is some kind of little superpower or skill set or something like that. You know, it doesn't have to be technology based, but the technology, you know, that's often where younger architects can leapfrog current architects or slightly more senior architects, right? If you come out and let's say you're really interested in visualization and you've got this like wicked diagram style of rendering or using V-Ray and it looks like a, you know, cool physical model, you could be like getting into animation with Cinema 4D. And to a firm, that's like super useful that you have this little skill set. Or maybe you're like you're fairly good at Grasshopper, for example. It's a really valuable thing to have. So then when you're looking at, you know, a couple of portfolios, both are quite good designer, you both got quite good design sensibility, your portfolios are fairly similar, let's say. The next thing is that, oh, this person has this little skill set that could be really useful for us to sell our ideas and sell up our projects and that kind of thing. So that's why I definitely do advocate for like developing a little superpower in university, and typically the technology side of things is where that can be done. Like, you know, loads of people are like interested in the Unreal Game Engine right now, and you know, you have a skill set in that. Suddenly, you become like a unique character in the sea of applicants. So that would be my second first thing is, you know, you have to have a great design sensibility, which is reflected in a great portfolio. Second thing is, I would advise to develop a little architect skill set, whether it's computation, whether it's BIM, whether it's visualization, animation, you know, pursue the one that you're most interested in. And three, I think networking is super important. You know, like the more conferences go online, and you know, today you're on a call with us here in ATN, and like, you know, a few years ago that wasn't as accessible as you might think, right? And now conferences are getting more you know, are online more, and you see more and more architects getting on social media platforms, whether it's Instagram, LinkedIn is obviously a great one, clearly. But you know, you're seeing more on YouTube and stuff like that. So yeah,
It
those.
feels really honored to speak to you because, you know, you want to work somewhere and you're completely, you know, in the other part of the world and you get to talk to someone who is really working there and sharing their experience. I've been following you for the past, a lot of talks and I could not attend one sustainable talk in between. Thank you so
Awesome. No. Thank you so much for coming. I mean, that this is why
much.
we set this up. So that's exactly the kind of thing we love to hear. Like, this is why we set this up is 'cause, you know, there aren't that many people talking from the perspective of being in practice. I think that's the thing that's big with me is like, you know, we're actually you know, working in practice. I still that's my number one goal is to, you know, design stuff that gets built, right? That's why we're all architects. And you know, sharing my experiences from that perspective, and that's definitely when Guillaume and I first started talking about this, that was the goal. So thank you for the question. I hope that helps. Guillaume, I don't know if and Faisal, if you want to add anything to that.
Yeah, I'm now going for master's in architecture. Sustainable design is one of my concentration or the elective. So yeah.
Cool. That's super interesting.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'd say if I had a piece of advice, would be not necessarily to focus on, you know, what exact company you want to work for and kind of like go from there. Is more like, okay, what do I have in my baggage and what do I want to achieve next? And then try to find a company. I think that's what you're doing, but just to make sure, I try to find a company that actually represent and pushes what you're interested in. You know, I got hired at Big mostly because I wanted to go back to kind of three design oriented work and really focus on, you know, how to put a narrative together and kind of kickstart a project with a very strong story. And I was from an engineering background, so it was kind of a big turn for me. And I think that's what I try to achieve in my career is kind of like, okay, what's the kind of blind spot I have in my skill set and that could eventually get me to the kind of architect I want to be. So it's like both trying to find your strength and what you can bring to a company, but also what is it gonna teach you, and what do you kind of miss in your skill set? Like right now, I feel like I was not so exposed to like the actual material world and construction, so I decided to kind of turn again from kind of more design high level to like really more down to earth kind of work. So my advice, I think, is, or at least what I'm trying to do with myself is try to constantly kind of change and chase what I'm not fully comfortable with to be comfortable in as much as possible. But that's a way to approach it. Some people like to really specialize and go and be excellent in one domain, and that's totally fine too. I think you need to kind of think about that general path too first, if you want to really specialize or if you want to kind of understand and be more generalist.
Yeah, I think it's super important to become a well-rounded architect first, and then start to specialize and focus on something. But thanks for the question, Naveen. I hope that helps.
Yeah, thank you. Thank
Yeah,
you,
thank you for joining.
Andy.
I know we got next up. We have Estefani. I hope I pronounced that correctly. You actually had, I know you submitted your questions on Instagram. So thanks for joining. You actually had a great question. I don't know if you want to repeat it or we can just delve into it, but you had one about the metaverse, which was super interesting.
Hey there.
Hey.
Well, I have another question actually, which is not related to software that much, so that it just came up to me, like you said, that we could talk with other stuff as well.
Sure. We can do all of them.
So just a very small background. I'm from Brazil,
Oh,
and
cool.
currently I'm studying in Budapest in Hungary. I've studied architecture before in Brazil, and now I'm studying here. I will end up with a master's. So what I like is to look for this kind of different experiences. And right now I'm planning and thinking of doing some kind of summer internship next year. So my question is related to that. Like, is that a thing that people still do, like do a 3 months internship in a company, in, well, big companies? And what should I focus in this, like how to achieve that? Like, what should I be mainly focusing right now? I do, like, am very interested in Beam right now. I am working with Revit a lot, and I did start a bit with Grasshopper, but I'm not sure, like, what should I exactly tack first to have like a more impressive and bring value to an internship like that.
Yeah. Well, yeah, firstly, for sure, firms do internships. Yeah, well, I mean, we have interns every year, of course. I think interns are like super important. Of course, you want to give the opportunity for like students who are still at university to have experience. It's actually one thing I wish I did more when I studied. Like I always I never really considered doing the summer internship thing, and I wish I did consider it more because it is a really great way to get your foot in the door early on. So I would definitely recommend applying. And also I think whenever you say the word internships, people say, immediately think it's like unpaid free work. I don't think there's many internships that are unpaid these days, especially not in the UK or US. Like just because internship is not mean it's unpaid. So you're getting paid. I spend most of my summer holidays like working as a builder or stuff like that so I could save up a bit of money. But I wish I had done internships. So I would definitely apply for that. Again, the same kind of rules apply. Like you need a good portfolio and have a good design sensibilities and things like that. That being said, I mean, it's always whether it's about learning Revit or Grasshopper and all that kind of stuff. Again, this assumes that you've got like a good design sensibility and a good portfolio and all this kind of things. But having that like Revit knowledge, it is really valuable. Although it's not quite as like exciting, so to speak, as Grasshopper, for example, and stuff like that. I have to admit, it is becoming more and more valuable. Like that, even at firms, big firms, not everyone knows Revit, so it is a valuable thing. And I think, like I was saying to Naveen, I think that's a valuable skill set to have. So, in terms of like trying to get like the best opportunity to get an internship, again, I'm gonna repeat myself a little bit, is like networking is super important. Like, again, Instagram, LinkedIn, all this kind of stuff. You can connect with people that may work at the practices that you want to work at. Two is develop a great portfolio. That was one thing I was always like, one, I wasn't really thinking about internships in the summer, and two, I was just like so drained at the end of the year, I couldn't be bothered to like spend time on the portfolio, so I just throw it together. If you can put a decent portfolio together, that really, really helps. And then yeah, maybe try and if you do have that little skill set, I think that's super important. And you know, as an intern that can use Revit, that can be super useful. You know, but in terms of once you get there, it's like you just, you know, be a sponge, and you know, you're often you could be doing anything from coming up with ideas and sketches to, you know, modeling or model making, or you know, like it really is quite open to what you can what you'd be doing depending on what firm you work for. But yeah, I would definitely advise to give a to apply for internships. That's definitely something I wish I had done.
Can I do a quick follow-up?
Yeah. You gotta ask your metaverse question because that was a really good question.
Yeah, we can go to
We'll get that one.
that. Does I've seen, for example, in Big, you do like 6 months internship. Do they do like remote internship as well, or is that in person? Because, for example, now I'm in Budapest, so like to move for
Yeah.
6 months to, I don't know, Barcelona would be kind of hard because I'm in school, so.
Yeah. That is a good question. It's always in person. It's always in person, but we now live in this world of COVID. So I think, in fact, I know you would have to be in the UK, I think, because legally you would have to be working in the UK or something along those lines as a British company. So like if you were to join the London office. So I'm not 100% sure about this, so don't quote me, but I think you would be required to be in the same country. But you know, the world we live in right now, where suddenly you have to work from home and that kind of things, it would be more open to it. But traditionally, yeah, it's always been in person. But so yeah, I can't give you a direct answer. But yeah, I think it is intended to be in person.
Can I add to the internship conversation?
Yeah.
I mean, I think what's great about internship in a way is that you know it's kind of defined in time, so you know there is an end to it. So one thing, if I had to go back, I would maybe do more internship for sure, but I would probably go a little bit wild and just. I mean, there are so many different ways of doing architecture, and you realize that each time you change jobs, like every company is so different. It's like you can see the internship as, okay, do I want to validate exactly what I want to do? And I think that's really a good thing to do. But you could also think of it as like, okay, I'm going to try something different and make sure I don't want to do that. Could also be an approach. And the great thing
Yeah.
is that even if you don't necessarily want to do that, you're gonna learn how people that work differently see architecture or work and what state of mind they are in, because you'll always meet through your career people that have a different approach and you're gonna have to work with them. And I think the more diverse point of view you have, the better architect you'll be, because I feel like being extremely good, having all the skill set is really important, is the base, is the core. But another thing is really to try to understand how people work, because you're never by yourself and you have to make people work for you in a way or your project. So, you know, don't be shy and try. I would say the more weird experience you have, or I guess the more out of exactly what you think architecture should be, is the better at the end of the day. I'm not sure that's good advice,
Cool.
Yeah.
Thank you for the advice. That's
No,
nice.
I think that's good because you really get a bit of a mix of experience early on.
Yeah, and you are not kind of like, what's hard is when you start to work, you're like, okay, this is part of my career now. I'm gonna start that. I'm not gonna quit in like 6 months to try something else. People kind of want you to be committed for a while, and that's normal, and you're gonna grow with it. The beauty of internships is that you can kind of jump and try things and experience different things without too much commitment.
Yeah, that's a great piece.
Also, to add to that, I just wanted to share one thing I did during my internship is this was really, really useful for me. So I did an internship at a British firm in Dubai, And at the beginning of the internship, I sat down with my supervisor, who was awesome because, you know, he was very sort of welcoming in this. And I showed him the RIBA plan of work, and I asked him if I could go through all the 8 stages of the plan of work during my internship phase. So I went through, you know, everything from the sort of brief to conceptual design to technical design, handover, and I got to experience every part of the architecture phase, which was super, super helpful for me in terms of, as Gillum was saying, sort of knowing the things that I want to do and the things that I don't want to do as well, things I'm not so interested in sort of doing in my architecture career. So I think that would be helpful, sort of sitting down with your supervisor and asking him if, or asking her if they could, if you could go through all the different phases of the you know, architecture process, and then, you know, get to experience them in a short amount of time.
And you got lucky. That's a great internship to have.
I was
I
gonna
know,
say,
my
yeah.
supervisor was awesome.
Not ma
I'm
not
very
many
lucky.
firms could actually show you the whole the whole sequence, the whole stages.
Yeah. In here, I'm struggling a bit because I don't speak the language, the Hungarian language, so it's been a bit hard to find that good opportunity. I hope I can find something remote. That would be the dream.
Yeah, no, I'm sure there is more remote stuff in the world of COVID, but yeah, traditionally it's not, it's more in person. But yeah, I think there would be. But you did have you had another question you submitted on Instagram, which I thought was super interesting. I don't know if you want to ask it
Yeah, the
or I could read it
metaverse, we
out,
should, yeah,
but
for sure.
I think you asked what softwares available now would become indispensable to join the metaverse or for the metaverse. I thought that was a super great question, because I think the whole metaverse thing is growing in hype, and which was kind of reflected. It was our biggest talk that we've ever done, I think. There was like 120 people on the talk. So people are really interested in it, and you're now seeing more and more architects, like, or more and more people designing for the metaverse and getting paid for it. So who needs an internship when you could become like a metaverse architect? But I would say that you know, a lot of people that are, you know, designing in various metaverses, I don't think there's a specific program that they work in. Like I hear a lot of people of just using like really basic stuff like SketchUp or and importing it through there, or like basic you know, whatever metaverse it's for has a basic modeling function to it. So I think already by just being a trained architect, you aren't, it's not like you're unfamiliar with modeling in 3D and 3D modeling platforms. So you'd already be ahead of the curve there. The only two softwares that kind of does spring to mind, it would be the game engine side of things, like Unreal, and Unity. And maybe also Blender. I'm not as versed in Blender, but it seems to be coming up a little bit more when I hear stuff about the metaverse. Faisal is maybe a good one to tune in since he has his own metaverse. So I don't know what you guys have been using to model and stuff like that. But yeah, so I think you'd be ahead of the curve already, but what springs to mind would be Unreal and Unity.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Ollie. I think you can pretty much design in any software. The only important part is optimization for virtual platforms or metaverses. And you know, Unity and Unreal are obviously very, very important. Blender is great because it allows you to sort of really optimize geometries and things like, you know, the amount of triangles you have in your geometry, etc., to make it easier for the experience on the metaverse. So, for example, if it's a web-based metaverse or it's a software-based metaverse, you want people to have the best experience, not just of, you know, seeing the aesthetics of the design, but also of the actual user experience and, you know, character engagement, and all that is affected by how heavy the project actually is. So a lot of people use Blender, some people use Maya, 3ds Max as well. It just depends on sort of your, you know, design aesthetics or, you know, your design approach. But I would say the most important thing is to learn Unreal and Unity as soon as possible, because they're also building their own metaverse actually. So I have a feeling those softwares might become less open source than they are at the moment. So I would say learn Unity and Unreal as soon as possible and get into that sort of workflow.
There you go. That's the future skill set for a metaverse architect. There you go. So, thank you so much for your questions. I thought they were really useful. I don't know if you have any more, you can keep going, but otherwise we'll move on to our next person who had their hand raised.
Thank you. Thank you for the answers.
Cool.
Let's let other people ask as well.
Well, if you got another one, hang around. Otherwise,
Okay. All
obligado
right.
for the question.
You're welcome.
So next up, we got T Hung. I seen you also submitted a question on Instagram, so I'll let you just ask it in person.
Hey guys.
Hey.
Actually, I just got the booster, so I don't remember what I put in last night.
No worries. I can read it out. I can read your question out to you if you want. But
Yeah,
otherwise, if you have a question right now, do you want
yeah.
to know a bit about yourself? Like, where are you from? What's your current? Are you a recent graduate, an architect, or?
I'm actually working backwards toward my degree.
Okay.
So I work for engineer and design build, and
Okay,
I'm going to
cool.
school at the same time. So,
Nice.
but yeah, I'm from Houston, Texas,
Oh, cool.
and
Not far from Guillaume. Guillaume's in Arizona, so he's kind of close.
But the question I had was, has or is the design process, how's it changed, or is it going to change if we move further into computational and parametric design to solve like programmatic and structural problems? I mean, or take example of like the Finch Grasshopper plugin. Are we going to be solving for programs versus like traditional design where people work together to create a form or an idea or a concept?
Yeah, I see what you're saying. That's a great question. I don't, I guess the what your question is like how much of a, I think it's a question of how much of a job as an architect is gonna be automated. Maybe I don't think the design process will be fundamentally changed in that, you'll get a brief, each individual architect will have an approach of coming up with a concept, whether that's research based or, form based or something like that. And then they'll go through various different options and, pick one and present, et cetera, et cetera. I think it's more of a case of hopefully we'll see the design process be streamlined a little bit. So the stuff that we don't need to spend as much time doing is streamlined and automated, so we can spend more time on the stuff that we are really adding value to, the critical thinking, the design thinking, which is not as easy to automate at all. So, for example, when you look back at an architect's, 30, 40 years ago, a significant amount of their time was spent drawing, right? And maybe, because they had to produce X amount of drawings and they were hand drawn, a huge amount of time was spent actually drawing. Fast forward to today, and you look at, let's say Revit, for example, or even AutoCAD, we can spend less time, like line by line, drawing a wall, and that is just, in terms of Revit, that's sliced from a 3D model that you've may have manually or computationally made. So it's freed us up more time to spend on the actual design thinking and the design exploration and things like that. So to look forwards, that's what I hope and that's what I think will happen to the design process. We'll see a more streamlined design process. But of course, we do also have to be slightly wary that, like, maybe there is this other trend of, all these like generative design plugins, you know, where like you plug in the site and the parameters and it comes up with some, you know, 1,000 shitty looking buildings and you pick one and quickly move forwards with it. You know, and some architects wouldn't mind that, and they just jump straight into like the technicalities of how to detail it and all that kind of stuff. So I'm sure that would exist, but I don't think that's going to be the primary thing that we'll see the design process change. I think hopefully it will be more streamlined.
Yeah, I think there's going to be as many approaches as there are ways of thinking about architecture, I think. I definitely agree with you, Ollie, on the kind of workflow, like trying to move from manual kind of like brainless tasks, like give that to the computer. That's definitely the main thing, I think, kind of the low-hanging fruit. And then I think there's something in between this and then the fully kind of generative design, which is kind of more the analytics, like getting a feedback loop from your model, from your architecture, like trying to kind of understand what you're doing better, whether it's daylight or it's kind of energy consumption or amount of materials or all this kind of stuff. And kind of as the tools are going to develop, you're going to have this more and more kind of live in your process, whether instead of kind of checking it at the end of the design process and be like happy or not with it. And most of the time you're like happy with it because you don't have time to change it. and then there's the kind of fully generative design, which I think still has a place, but it, to me, it's going to apply to very specific domain in which I think architects work differently. I would think about like hotels or hospitals or things that have intrinsic, extremely kind of rational logics to them, that you can kind of inform a computer how to, you know, there are goals to achieve, which whereas it's efficiency of a floor plate and you have very specific units that you repeat, that, you know, you would probably tend towards a more efficient, like when efficiency, I guess, is the main goal, that's where I think generative design could help. Because if at the end of the day, your job as an architect is kind of, you know, arranging room the cheapest way possible on a site, instead of necessarily like creating an interesting space or experience, then maybe that's where, you know, computer can help you. Computer can define efficiency. It cannot really define like interesting space or or kind of like all these things that sensitivity kind of define.
Yeah, kind of inform. It could allow you the design process to be a bit more informed, right? I guess is another way of saying it. Like right now, you're kind of like, oh yeah, this is sort of south facing. This is going to perform quite well. But now you can actually run ace quick sort of analysis on it without having to be a complete, you know, ladybug nerd, and you might actually get some results back that informs it.
Like I think there is a lot of different things in computation. There is generation, there is kind of like workflow driven things, and then there is analytics, and they can all come together in different amounts in every project. But they may be more relevant in some project than other. So I think there is just no like one answer to catch it all. I think it's going to depend on what the client is interested in, what the architect is interested in, and what the project requires.
Yeah. I hope that answers your question. I will read out the question you submitted, because I thought that was also quite a good one. I think you asked, where is it now? That if someone looking to get into the management or projects leader role, you know, should become a super user, which I thought was a great question, and a great question for Guillaume to also like chime in on, because he was a project leader and, you know, he got to that project management side whilst also still being very being a super user within Big. But I think the term super user is not just someone who is like a, Grasshopper BIM nerd. It's also like there's a whole, if you read Randy's book, there's a ton of like things like soft skills, like, you know, being able to communicate and work within a team, and you know, being able to like you know, work with other people and this kind of stuff. So I think absolutely a project leader, and I think most super users that I come across are either project leaders, they're either specialists, or they're the go-to design, you know, people in a firm. So yeah, I think a super user is most commonly found in a project leading role, as was Guillaume. And I think the reason for that is because you are one of the standout figures. And to also answer, someone else asked, do you need to, I think they said, do you need to be a Superman to work in firms like Big, for example? I assume they were talking about a super user, because you don't need to be able to fly or run through walls to work at Big, although that would be pretty cool. But like the majority of people that work in most of these, like, super users are not common. Most of the people that work in firms like are at Big or any other firms are not super users. Like, to me, it's still a fairly rare thing. So it's not like you have to be a super user to work at these places. But yeah, I think a project manager and a product leader is absolutely a super user. Is great for a super user. Yes, once you get to that level, you're not going to be spending as much time, you know, writing scripts or building models in Revit and that kind of stuff. But it's super important that you understand those things to deploy within your team and within the project. But yeah, Guillaume, this might be a good one for you to chime in, since you are a super user and you were a project leader.
Yeah, I think, I mean, you answered spot on, Oliver. I don't know if I have much to add, but I think the quality of a project lead is, you know, being kind of curious and keep things open for people to kind of participate in the project in the best way possible, but also offer ways to work or achieve the goals as efficiently as possible and teach at the same time. So definitely being, you know, more versed in as much things as possible is definitely what you want. So
I think it was
yeah.
also just like loosely, you know, working with you on a few products. It was kind of interesting to s from what I saw, like, because you had that computational skill set as well. I felt like you were able to kind of, in your case, you were sometimes, and correct me if I'm wrong, like running the script, and then that would kind of filter down to some of the other roles. Like you would be controlling maybe the script that was like creating the form, and then that would get, the geometry would get passed on to someone else in the team, and so you can still sometimes be like driving the team through computation as well a little bit. Would you say
Yeah, I
that's
guess
right?
you can. Yeah, maybe. I mean, it's always tricky. Like, I guess I would take the word script in a very wide sense, not necessarily just a Grasshopper script, but kind of the script of putting a project together, which is not a Grasshopper script. But it's
The
like,
story.
I think like if you have the mentality to be able to, I mean, that's what I love about scripting is like you have a very complex problem that you see. And then being able to script allows you to, I mean, it's more like being able to break it down in smaller steps, smaller processes that are easy to achieve to get to that goal. That's kind of what you're doing as a project lead. Like you are asking, okay, you have this site, you have this program, just go ahead and design something that's amazing for everybody that is, you know, contributing to the project. It's a daunting task, like. So you need to break it down, you need to do studies, you need to kind of decompose the work in many different steps and different kind of perspectives. And that's kind of what you do when you do a script as well, I guess. So I think it could be seen as more like a mentality thing that makes sense. And I guess if you are a more kind of rational designer. I think it's much harder to be a project lead if you are kind of more, I guess, you know, work through the project with more your feelings about what the space needs to be, because it's harder to communicate, and things that are hard to communicate make things hard to work as a group towards, I guess. So I guess my final answer is that in a company like Big, where I guess all the projects are need to be explained, need to be rationalized, needs to be very streamlined, I think the kind of mentality of scripting and the mentality of breaking down problems in quantifiable things that you can kind of compare definitely helps and definitely fits the role of project lead. But I think it may be different in other type of companies where there is more like someone who decides that's going to be the design and figure it out. Then the project lead experience is very different, and I'm it doesn't
necessarily
apply
That's
one
true.
To one.
That's true. Well,
thanks for answering my question. And I had to plug the Arc library because it's been keeping me busy. So thanks.
Cool. What's the Arc library?
Awesome. Awesome.
What is the Arc library?
So Arc library is a digital library that that we're building. To sort of bring books to the metaverse, I guess, and make them accessible.
Oh, cool.
So, yeah. Thanks, Tom.
Cool. I didn't even know about that. I'll have to look into myself.
you already have membership, Ollie. I'll give you access.
I've got a cool. Awesome. I'll get some reading done. Cool. Well, thanks for the question and thanks for coming up. Next in line, I think, is Adam. How's it going, Adam? You
Hey, guys.
Want to fire out one of your questions?
Yeah, sure. So first of all, thanks for the interesting discussion here. And
thanks for coming up.
Maybe a little bit of background. So I'm also fellow ex-Bixter, working here in Copenhagen, now currently at CF Miller. So I've been pondering a lot about AI and architecture these days. Like, this was occupying some of my time. And I was thinking, when you guys started talking about the generational component of, you know, our, let's say, parametric tools, I'm talking about Finch and all that stuff, we recently had a pilot project done with Spacemaker AI. And we were talking about generational aspect of it. And then the guys from Spacemaker, they said something that really stuck into my head, is that the architects, they don't really want the generational part, the generative part, because it kind of, you know, takes away the job, and they rather draw it themselves and then assess. And then looking at the broad spectrum, you know, we have a lot of ideas how the artificial intelligence can influence our work. And there's a lot of big picture part. But just looking at, you know, at the smaller things and about kind of the mundane uses of AI that I could see. So for instance, the parametric design, of course, the mainstream version that we all use now would be, you know, Grasshopper on an everyday basis. But I was actually wondering, what do you guys think could be like a very early adoption examples of proper AI in our daily workflow as architects? Because I mean, I have some of my own ideas about this, but I was really curious to hear your perspective on that.
Yeah, so that's a great question. Exactly as you're building up to it, and I wonder if you may have the same conclusion, was like quite mundane stuff like building regulations, right? I'm almost thinking like I've talked about this before. Do you ever remember Mr. Clippy on in Word?
Exactly.
imagine
really
like
trying to do this here, right?
Yeah, I'm not doing it. Like, if anyone wants the idea, run with it. But like,
The Mr. Clippy was saying that.
Oh, right, right. Sorry.
It seems like you're trying to make a double colon.
Yeah. So it'd be like, are you trying to put a door there? Because the, you know, UK regulations mean it needs to be 200 millimeters from the, you know, like building regs. Yeah. Like, I don't think there's many architects out there that are like super excited to look through their drawings and make sure that it's all up to, you know, building reg standard. And that's something that's very This should be very, very understandable from a AI perspective, I think. No expert myself. And it could just really help automate that side of things. That seems like a very low-hanging fruit type thing, that would just, whether you're working, a plugin to Revit springs to mind because that's usually where you would document your building, and that prompts you, based on the location of the project, and tells you that this is maybe not to code compliance, and you can choose to ignore it or not, depending on what stages of the project you're in. But that's one thing that really springs to mind. I don't, I'm trying to think of other ones. I guess, you could say the same thing for like maybe automating drawings and stuff like that. But yeah, that's one that really springs to mind. Also, you could say that another side of that same coin is maybe planning. In the UK, it's a little more subjective, the whole planning process. But like, for example, in New York, the planning, the zone requirements are quite, it's pretty black and white. Is this is the zone, this is the maximum FAR, and there's some of these like sun.
Yeah, I mean, completely agree. Although the things that you're mentioning now about planning, like those are mostly suited toward the tool made for, developers. Like the feasibility study is usually, like before we even get the brief to our hands. Like that's what they're doing. But I see an interesting trend in terms of AI-powered tools that they are slightly moving towards, like they're getting being tailored towards towards architecture. And I mean, I assume it also is because like the more quality data is being produced that the AI algorithms can actually use. Because before that, like it was mostly BIM that could provide you any useful data. Because like the things that we do in Rhino, you cannot really use the B-reps or anything like that for as a quantifiable data for AIs to train anything. So, I mean, I completely agree that the mundane tasks and like the early adoption stages of AI in our architecture work would probably mostly like finishing your sentence in an email. But
Yeah,
yeah, I'm really curious to see what's going to be next, because for the big picture, it's kind of it's not easy, but you can theorize, and make some great assumption, but for the small parts, like I'm really curious what's going to be actually the first thing that's going to stick. And the regulation, of course, but on the concept level, yeah, it'll be really
Well,
interesting to know.
yeah, maybe it's a little bit uncreative of me to think of Mr. Clippy for Revit, but like as something that would just merge. But actually, one of the partners in the office showed me. I think it's OpenAI was released to the public in some way, and it has this. There was this function where we were able to just write a sentence, and the program comes up with like a storyline behind it. For example, like you could type in write a movie for Ollie, Guillaume and Faisal to do with Architect Network, and it would come up like it would have already learnt, it spent a significant amount of time like scanning the internet and learning all these things. And so based on that, it would come up with like a science fiction, like a trailer for a film. It was like, in a dystopian world, Ollie, Guillaume and Faisal are in a fight to survive in this architectural disaster or something like that. And it was incredible how like interesting and provocative the ideas were. So like, my Mr. Clippy idea, I feel like a bit of like an idiot saying that after seeing how mind-blowing, like
Yeah, but that's the thing. Like, you need to start somewhere, right?
yeah.
Like, of course, you can translate this idea that you just described about the movie scenario. Like, your type in parameters will be, residential building, like
Right.
Via 57 in New York, but make it in Bangalore, and then go, right? So you can, of course, do that. But then Mr. Clippy could be, like the first link in that
Exactly,
chain of
yeah.
events. So.
That's the first, that's the first one. What should we call him? What would Revit's Mr. Clippy be? It'd be like, I'm not sure. But yeah, I think, yeah, that springs to mind. Just like, that kind of automating the stuff that we're not so interested in doing. But you know, as we start to see what AI really is, you know, it could be just so open for many things.
Mr. Desky from
Mr. Mm-hmm. Desky.
As you say, Adam, like AI needs data to kind of analyze and then find patterns and repeat. So, you know, for the design part, it's a bit hard, I think, to me to imagine what it looks like, because architects by default kind of want to get out of typical patterns, at least in some portion of the industry. But for things, I think what was interesting to me when, I mean, I kind of went a little bit away from this for a little bit, but we're starting to look at test planning, for example. Like, you do a great massing, you have this awesome office space, and then you quickly need to, you know, get the client a desk count. And right now the path is like someone sits down for 3 days and, you know, kind of do all this test fit, put all the meeting rooms, all the desk. And this is kind of a fake exercise at the end of the day, because things are not going to be exactly this way, but it's just a way to quantify something. And I think there is a lot of potential in AI to do this kind of task, where it's really about repeating something that's kind of understood by everybody how to do it. Not necessarily super easy to explain exactly how to do it step by step, because you kind of want to align things, but this is the kind of patterns that exist and that I'm sure AI can kind of pick up and replicate. I don't know if you would agree with that.
Yeah, I mean, this makes total sense, and you have already examples like the one that I used. I think it was called testfit.io, and they do kind of this thing. I just don't know how much artificial intelligence is in that, because it's highly parametric, and, you know, like, then it's hard to lose the boundary between the parametric of it and the artificial intelligence. Like, is there any intelligence embedded in this plan making? This I don't know, but I could definitely see that, you know, like,
it's more deterministic for sure. Yeah
I think TestFit, I don't know if they actually use like AI or anything like that, right?
I don't think so, but I could easily see that there could be an AI component, at least optimizing for, you know, glare or optimizing for daylight, like anything. But yeah.
So the thing I was talking about is called GPT-3 by OpenAI. Definitely have a look at it. It is actually quite mind blowing.
Nice. All right, I'll take a look.
Yeah.
I was mostly looking for now at those text to image generation, because like that's kind of down my alley, and also spent so many evenings just like doing that.
That was one thing I know I heard about, was like using AI for the beginning of products to basically troll through and generate like the background research of, you know, all the things that you do at the start of a product. You look into the history of the site, the environmental data of the site, historical references from the site, all that kind of stuff that you spend a lot of time trolling the internet for. You could automate, you know, like use AI to kind of streamline that process. So yeah, that was another one that came up.
Kind of like this big data mining approach.
Yeah. I don't know if that's big data or actual big data. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But no, interesting, right. Interesting question for sure. Thanks for coming up.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks. That was a great question. Next up, I think we got Muhammad Ali. What's going on?
Hello.
Hey, thanks for coming up to the stage. Where do you want to give it a little introduction to yourself and ask your question?
Yes, of course. I'm just like graduated like 1 year ago from Egypt.
Awesome.
And currently I'm staying in Muscat, Oman, as I work as an interior designer, aka visualizer.
Okay, cool.
Like, going to be a part of my question. I already asked 2 questions on Instagram, but like now I can give like some reasons why that why did I ask this question? Like, yeah. It's a question about being a Superman.
Being a grasshopper guy.
Being Superman, I asked this.
Oh,
question.
You? Oh, right. Yeah. Yeah. So I hope I kind of answered that one a little bit, or did that make sense?
Yeah. I'm going like to ask. I don't know if it's like a personal problem or like it's come to anyone else like this. Like, I feel always like I'm missing out due to, I guess, like the difference of educational systems between like of architecture between city countries, like areas. I'm going to give an example to what I have studied. Like, I know, I'm sure that we are way like far from computational design and all this trendy design theories like going right now. So I'm always feeling like I'm missing out when I see like some design depends on computation design or programming or like anything trendy right now, and I don't know anything about it. So that makes me feel like I'm missing out and I can't reach this. I feel fascinated when I see any of these projects. I don't know if this happened like to other to anyone else, but I don't know. Like when the areas that I work in now, like mostly depend on visualization. So yeah. I design like interior design and also exterior, but mostly depends on visualization. I guess I'm
like you spend a lot of time doing visualization stuff. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
So I think you know what you're experiencing now is what essentially what you're saying is like it's not as accessible for where you are, right? You don't have as many people around you, you know, talking about computation or teaching computation and BIM and stuff like that. Is that that's kind of what you're getting at?
Yes.
Yeah.
Although there are some people like starting, but not like you can find it anywhere. Only some people who had the chance to travel abroad, like Europe or maybe USA, to study and come back and teach it. Like they are like few people.
So I mean, this it's an interesting one because like in some ways I kind of felt the same thing studying in the UK almost 10 years ago now. I feel a little bit old. But like when I was studying in the UK, it was kind of a similar. I did my master's at Liverpool, and I was really interested in like what is this grasshopper thing and what is this parametric stuff, and no one at the university like knew how to use grasshopper. There was one other guy in my year, and between us, we like just kind of, you know, learnt from each other as much as we could, but we just didn't have we didn't have like anyone that could really teach us in the whole of the university, which nowadays seems a little bit crazy, right? To think that there's no one in the university that would teach grasshopper and stuff like that.
Sorry for interruption, but I want to add something. Like, imagine you're saying 10 years ago you were feeling this, like now I'm feeling this.
Yeah.
Like, we are 10 years late about this.
Yeah, but okay, here's where I'd say it's a little bit different is, you know, back then the scene on YouTube and stuff like that, of course it existed, but it was nowhere near as good as it is now. And like, for example, today, and this is a huge reason why we started Architect Network, and a huge reason why we decided to go onto YouTube and things like that, is because you're right. Like, a lot of this knowledge is, you know, it starts off in universities and in like city hubs like New York or London and stuff like that. And because you're in these cities, it's just like you can share information a bit easier, and that's where it spreads. But you know, there's still there's so many young architects like yourselves that are you know, maybe located in places where this stuff isn't as accessible, and that's why we decided to go online and make as much of our content as accessible as possible, and start our YouTube side, our YouTube channel. So I think the thing that you have now, like I was experiencing something like this 10 years ago, when I was at university, but the online scene is nowhere near as strong as it is now. So my advice, like you are here now, is to continue to look online for those kind of resources, and you're seeing more and more like online workshops and things like that where you can connect with people. Again, like, you know, especially given the pandemic, like so many of these conferences are online. And that was the moment for me when I was able to find people in 2000. And like, I think it was my final year at Liverpool. I went to the Fabricate conference in London, and my whole world was just like completely opened up to like all these people doing this incredible stuff with, you know, digital fabrication and computation and all this kind of stuff. And I was like, this is really interesting. This is going to be the future of the industry. And that was my light bulb moment. And of course, back then, if you wanted to attend it, you had to, you know, pay and go in person. But now you could, you know, go, maybe it's free online. There's a bunch of really great courses and lectures online, and you can access that much more easily online. So, and then the advantage for what you have then is, you know, maybe where you're based, you would become the super user and the skill set in your area, and suddenly you would become extremely valuable for where you are in the world. So, you know, my advice and what I hope would be the reality of it would be that online learning and like these courses and, you know, platforms like ours, where we'll soon next year be putting out courses and stuff like that on YouTube. There's a whole host of other, you know, people doing it, whether it's Design Morphine, Live Academy, Think Parametric. You got all these other YouTube channels that are doing really great stuff. So that would be my advice, is to really jump into the online side of it. And I would hope you'd be able to find a community like you are part of the Architect Network now, and you're here today talking to us. And I would advise to continue through the online side. I mean, I hope that answers your question. It's a positive answer for you, but that would be my advice.
Yeah, that's perfect. Thank you.
And don't be like, the beauty of all these tools is that, yeah, it's, I agree with Ollie, it's like, it's super important to get introduced to it and get the gist of it through classes and stuff. But eventually, after a little bit, you'll figure it out that the only way you can get better at it is just figure it out by yourself and try it and fail. And you go on a forum and, you know, ask other people how they do it and etc. You don't necessarily need to have someone to tell you how to do it, because you'll make it your way. And that's kind of what it should be, is, you know, you have all the ingredients, but you're the cook, and you wanna have someone that teaches you exactly how to do a perfect cake the way he does it. But then as a cook, you want to do your own amazing cake by yourself that no one has done before. So it, you know, it's a lot of like learning by yourself at the end of the day, after you get the basics in.
Yeah, well, you get to a certain level where you start to pick stuff up a lot more quickly from forums and stuff like that. But yeah.
Okay, thank you.
That was a great question. I think it's super useful for people to hear. I think we'll.
Can I jump in for a sec?
Yeah. Who is that? I can't see. Oh, this like, is funny.
Stephanie, yeah. So you've mentioned already a few times, like, super user architect and everything. What would that exactly be? Like, what makes a super user? Like, what's this word coming from?
What is... Okay, so the term super user comes from Randy Deutsch's book called Super Users. And in his book, he kind of breaks down what makes a super user. I think you can Google it and you'll see, like, I think he calls it the 11 C's. But to simplify it, the way he talks about a super user as being like someone who is, you know, quite digitally versed, you know, they typically know how to code and use tools like Grasshopper and BIM and that kind of stuff. But they also come with a lot of soft skills like, you know, being able to clearly communicate things, working well within a team, you know, continuing to be curious and self-teach and still ask for also, you know, find help from someone else and things like that. So in his, you'll have to look up the exact 11 or 12 C's. I can't remember them off the top of my head, but, you know, it's essentially, we also kind of refer to it as an architect, a digitally fluent architect. And I think when you have, you know, that digital side, but you also have the soft skill side, you become a super user. And you often find in firms right now, a lot of the go-to and standout people are these kind of super user characters that are, you know, they're great designers, but they also have a kind of digital, a quite a strong digital skill set. But they're also really nice people that can communicate and work really well within a team to simplify it. So that's what a super user is. It's kind of like the next generation digital architect. And that's kind of where loosely the architect term also came from, like a digitally fluent architect. But yeah, I definitely recommend to look, even just,
yeah, we'll look for the book.
Yeah, look, you know, you can, it's not a big book, and if you want to buy it and read it, it's kind of interesting. But you can also, like, I think you can find some snippets online where you'll actually get, or you can go on our YouTube channel and you'll hear the podcast with Randy, and we actually ask him to define what a super user is, and so you'll get a bunch of unique content from our talk, which is on our YouTube channel or also on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, to plug our own podcast out there. Otherwise, I think I'll run through a few of the answers from the questions online. I think we'll take one more question from Myra, who joined and put your hand up. How's it going, Myra? Do you want to introduce yourself a little bit and ask your question?
Okay, yeah, maybe it wasn't a question, it was just a comment, so
I'll just comment away.
Oh, I'm not an architect. Hello, my name is Myra. I have a background in GIS, I work with LiDAR, and so I do just stuff like that. My comment was that I'm very excited for architects and just other creators to be able to, like, my aha moment was using some software, just dabbling and being able to vectorize, you know, cities within minutes just with LiDAR data, free LiDAR data, you know, just simply creating the terrain and some building footprints and automatically vectorizing everything. And so I'm very excited for the future of software and just all these tools for everybody, because just to facilitate some of the things that we would normally have to do that is tedious, and that just allows creatives and people to work on more important things. So that's just what I was going to share. I'm very, very excited for that.
Explain a little bit more about, like, what do you mean by LiDAR? Do you mean, like, you're able to use the LiDAR on your phone to scan an environment or something, like the street or building or something like that?
Yeah. So I was a LiDAR technician for an engineering company. Mm. And so we would use airborne LiDAR data. And so we would usually fly it and we would get it for cities, like sometimes miles long. Wow. Of LiDAR.
Yeah.
But the cool thing is that some of this stuff could also be done with free LiDAR data that your municipality or state already has. And so I just use that to collect the height above ground. And that's how it vectorizes the buildings.
Interesting, interesting. So there's a lot of like LiDAR information that's kind of free for people to download and access, especially in
yes.
the States.
Mm-hmm. So that's what's so exciting, just the future of people getting to know more about these resources and
yeah.
tools and just having it in y'all's hands.
I mean, it's definitely been one of I've always seen, it's like, you know, you see people taking those like really expensive fancy ones on tripods where they scan like the interiors of oh, I mean, it's what you see now that's on like real estate places, like you can fly through your apartment. But like a few years ago, that was like super cool. I mean, people would go into like a forest and LiDAR scan it, and you get like this super eerie point cloud of a forest, or like, you know, can walk through a building. But yeah, I mean, it's interesting to see how that becomes more and more accessible on your phones and, you know, your iPad and all that kind of stuff, and then what you're able to do with it in the architecture world. I think that's going to be super interesting.
We actually did use it in a very specific case in the office I'm at right now. That was kind of unexpected, but there was this site with giant boulders, and you know, it's a site for a house. And so one of the guys in our team went and 3D scanned the boulder with his phone and then got it straight into Rhino. And it was amazing, like the quality and the precision it has, it's incredible. But I did see what you were talking about. In Phoenix, the university has all the as kind of all the data of the city, and you can basically regenerate the 3D of the entire city through the LiDAR data they provide freely. So it's been useful for me to kind of quickly generate context around a building and kind of without having to kind of hack things around or remodel it myself.
That's
So
cool. So you can bring
I'm
the
with you.
you scan the site essentially and pull it in. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. No, it's quite amazing.
So I think I'll answer one question from the Instagram thing. I think we've answered most of the other ones, but the only other one that came up, which is quite good, was like someone asked how to get into AEC development after learning the basics of programming. So like you know, I guess how do you transition from an architect, an engineer, or, you know, an architect that knows a little bit of code to working for a hyper or a test fit or a, you know, like develop, you know, a proper developer in the AEC space. I think that one is, you know, you see more and more people do it. I think, obviously, you know, to keep developing your programming skills, or, you know, whether it's Python or whatever language that you've learned, keep developing your programming knowledge. Start to make your own apps and developments on the side. I think that's really like, if you ever apply for jobs, I think those kind of people don't care so much about your CV and that you did a course in Python or something like that, but they do really care that you've try to make an app or a plugin for Grasshopper or Revit or whatever it is. Like that to me seems way more valuable than, you know, I did a Python coding course at you know, at this place. So I would continue to develop your programming skills in practice in your office, but also maybe create something on the side. And then again, like one of my top bits of advice for this is to go to conferences and connect with people that have also made that transition, you know, like characters like Andrew Human, for example. He was an architect and now he's a developer at Hyper. You also got like Brian Ringley, who did the same kind of thing. He went through like an architect, became a specialist, and then now he works for Boston Dynamics programming badass robots that do really cool dancing. So yeah, for just that, whoever that was on our Instagram, that was quite a good question. So and I think, you know, those kind of development firms, they want to hire architects that are interested in this and can code, and you'd be surprised how hard it is to find them. So I think that transition would be fairly easy to make, assuming you've now got a good enough programming basis. And you may even not need an incredible one, because honestly, being interested in it and it willing to learn would be, you know, as important, because you can train people up pretty quickly. So that was the only other question I wanted to answer for those of you who submitted questions. Otherwise, we had most people actually turn up to ask questions, so even better. But yeah, if anyone else has any questions, otherwise I think we'll wrap it up for today. It's been an hour and a half of questions, which I wasn't expecting so many, which that was great. So yeah, if anyone has a question, speak now, forever hold your peace. Otherwise, we will be back next weekend for our last talk this year. And I think we're going to end the year the way that we started this, with a discussion on blockchain and all the things that have gone on in the world of blockchain. I'm trolling around trying to get some blockchain experts or people that are interested in it to come join. So we'll be talking, we'll be ending the year with our very first talk on blockchain. Well, it won't be our first talk, but our first talk, for those of you who maybe weren't aware, our first talk on Clubhouse on the Architect Network was a room on blockchain. And so I thought it'd be good to end the year on that. Do we have someone that had a question there?
Yeah, I have a very short question.
Go for it.
Yeah, so as we go through the architecture school during my bachelor's, I thought that, you know, developing skill set is one of the important thing. And for me, it was very difficult to learn software and all. So I wanted to help my junior batches and others. So what would the best way to start in, like start a blog and writing about this? Like, you know, there are lots of free resources available, but, you know, because of lack of communication and there is a lot of gap between them and me, so they could, and over the time they don't find these resources. So how do I communicate these resources to him, by conducting a shop workshop kind of thing, or writing blogs, or sharing it through Insta post?
I mean, you know, definitely go into like some online workshops for sure is really good. There's a range of platforms that you can, you know, which are pretty affordable. Like, you know, I teach on Think Parametric. I recommend that. It's not because I don't get any money if tomorrow thousands of people start subscribing or not. I plug them because I think it's a pretty good price and it's pretty good content. You've got YouTube as well. There's loads of Archie YouTubers. But in terms of yourself, I think, you know, like, you know, we always ask people to kind of invite people to come join the Architect Network. So like reposting things and, you know, recommending platforms that you think is good, whether it's Architect Network or another one, or another one from YouTube or something like that. I think it's really important to like just spread the word, and, you know, social media is a great tool for that. I think for us, LinkedIn is obviously a great one. Instagram is a great one, and YouTube. So if you want to spread the word, I think those are great platforms for doing that. If you want to learn, I think there's also great resources on YouTube and online platforms like we've got Live Academy, we've got Futurely, we've got Design Morphine, Parametric Architecture does workshops now, obviously ourselves, Think Parametric. Yeah, I hope I haven't forgotten anyone, but yeah, all great places to kind of learn courses.
Thank you.
Yeah. Awesome. All right, guys. Well, thank you all for tuning in, and thank you so much for coming up and bringing your questions to the table. Like I said, we'll be back next weekend with our last talk for the year on blockchain. Otherwise, you can continue to tune in to old talks and stuff like that on our YouTube page, or you can follow us on our Instagram page, and we'll post up upcoming talks. We post up a weekly project programs. We ask some of the top firms in the world what programs they use for their projects, and we're getting more and more into our YouTube side, and we've got lots of videos that we're cooking up. So thanks everyone for joining. We'll see you next week. Have a good Sunday, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you. Great talk.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Bye.